The hospitality with a purpose is, the point is, whatever we want to do, we want to do it for the glory of God. And the Bible is full up of examples of hospitality. And we want to make this as absolutely practical as possible in your lives. And you think about hospitality, you think, well, that's a great idea. That gives you those warm, nice, fuzzy kind of feelings of being hospitable. But actually, if you look at your outline, the Word of God is very particular about hospitality. In Romans, it's a command. Paul says to the Romans, practice hospitality. Pretty straight up, pretty simple. If you're a believer, God wants you to practice hospitality. Also, number two, it's a requirement for church leadership. If you want to be in church leadership, there are two different places in the Word of God that says, hey, if you want to be a leader, you need to practice hospitality. And the same kind of lists that say things like, don't be drunk and don't beat people up, same kind of lists that say practice hospitality. God takes it pretty seriously. That's 1 Timothy 3:2 and Titus 1:8. Another example is, hospitality is one of the things required in the list for widows. In the New Testament church, there were widows that were old and there was no one to care for them. And they looked around and they said, you know, here we are, a church. We've got to take care of these people. And so they looked to see, okay, what do we need as qualifications for someone to be on the widow's list, to be taken care of, and the church support them? One of the things that was listed is this person need to be marked by a lifestyle of hospitality. Pretty serious. So if you're ever going to fall on hard times, need help from the church, if you want to be a leader in the church, or if you want to be a Christian, then God has a command that you need to be hospitable. Pretty cool. Waylon?
You want to read the verse?
Yeah, let me do that. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, so whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. And that's the purpose for being hospitable. It's not so much being hospitable because you're a real social person, because that's not an out in Scripture. It doesn't say, all you sanguine people who like to have people over to your house, be hospitable. The point is sharing your lives with other people and being able to pour into other people's lives. It's a real good way to do it, is being hospitable.
In a little while, we're going to be talking about a lot of different practical ways we can do this, but keep in mind that we're talking about being hospitable to two different groups of people. First of all, believers. Specifically in 1 Peter 4:9, the Bible says that we need to offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. That's other believers. And that sounds like it might not be that big of a deal, but life is always busy. And there's hardly ever a time when you think, oh, there's nothing going on, I'll just have people over. Usually there's always something that needs to be done. There's other things that you were planning on doing or that you need to get done or that you'd like to do. And so it's easy, even if we do get obedient and practice hospitality, to then accidentally grumble about it. But the scriptures were clear that that's something we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to complain about it. Galatians 6:10 says, as we have opportunity, we're supposed to do good to all people, especially believers. This is a way we can do good to each other. We can encourage each other.
I'll throw something in. Be hospitable to your pastor and your pastor's wife. That's a lonely job. That's a hard job to do. And you'd be shocked how often I've heard pastors say, yeah, you know, when I first came, a few couples invited me over. But since then, I see people at the church or when they've got a problem, but we don't really get invited over much. Don't have as many friends as we really wish we had. Isn't that shocking? But I think people, I don't know if they're intimidated by the pastor or they think, well, he's too busy. Love your pastor. He might very well be too busy. But just inviting him to come over sometime and get some ice cream or come to dinner, even if they are too busy, boy, they really do appreciate that.
Most of you are probably familiar with Hebrews 10:24-25 that talks about the fact that we're not supposed to give up the habit of meeting together, but we're supposed to be encouraging each other. Usually I think of that verse in a church setting, but having people in our homes is another way we can meet together, and it's certainly a way we can encourage each other. 3 John 1:8 and Romans 16:23 both refer to a man named Gaius. In the Romans verse, Paul, in that chapter in Romans, Paul is going through and kind of saying hi to all of his buddies in Rome. And when he gets to this man, he comments and he says, I and the whole church have enjoyed your hospitality. And in 3 John, John is writing to Gaius and complimenting him on his hospitality to traveling ministers. I like that in Romans it uses the word enjoyed. Some of the things that we do in ministry are work for us. Sometimes they're work for other people. But hospitality is something that we can enjoy and that other people can enjoy too.
Laurie's been talking about hospitality with believers. Another important area is unbelievers. And being hospitable to unbelievers is very important. Guys, you've been in the sessions with Dave Geisler. And how many times have you heard Dave say, you know, I've kind of pushed this in fast, but the best way is to have relationships with these people or follow up with these people. Or I just spent this time asking all these questions in a row to someone. But in real life, it's really kind of hard to do that. Do you guys see the video where he was asking the young lady questions? And she said, I don't know. And she looked nervous, didn't she? I mean, she looked kind of like she was, you know, didn't know what to say and didn't know what to think. When talking with unbelievers, wow, what if they're used to kind of coming over to your house for something? Or if they need to borrow something, you're the one that they figure you might have milk in the fridge. And they come over. Then you throw out one of those things that Dave Geisler said. And then maybe they don't see it for another 3 or 4 or 5 days. But then the Holy Spirit of an almighty God is working on them that time. So when they come back, instead of it being, I don't know, it's more along the lines of, hey, you said something the other day, and I don't really know. And I've been thinking about that. That's a huge difference.
1 Peter 2:12 says, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. It is difficult to live lives among pagans. If for no other reason than we get so busy with all of the responsibilities we have with our jobs and with our families and with our church, that it's work to be friends with pagans. And it's work for you guys now. It will be more work when you're out of college. It is really difficult. You have to be very intentional to be living where you have a relationship. Not that you won't be around pagans, because we will be. But as far as where we have an opportunity to show them good deeds, having them in our homes and being hospitable, that's a way we can show good deeds. I want to read another verse in Luke. Actually, a couple of verses where Jesus is talking. Then Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Well, we can look at that as obviously talking about physically lame, physically blind. But think about those students on those videos today. They were blind. They did not see the truth. And I think it's really valuable for us to consider, yes, we need to make time to encourage our brothers and have them over to our homes. The scripture's really clear about that. But also, we need to make sure we're making time to have people who are hurting into our home, who won't next Friday night invite us over for dinner because they are too worn out. Life has got them way down, and they're not going to be able to have us back over the same way. Just like Jesus says, they may not be able to repay you, but reach out to those hurting people.
We know that we're supposed to live our lives like Christ did. And when you really look through the New Testament and the Gospels and you see how Christ lived his life and the things that really got him in trouble and got him a bad reputation and a bad name, like the title, Jesus Christ, Friend of Sinners. How about that? You know, he broke the establishment up a little bit there. They didn't like that. It says in Mark 2:14 through 17 that after Jesus called Levi, you know what he did? He went to his house. He was a tax collector, and he met there and he ate with tax collectors and sinners, you know, and it got him a bad reputation. And the people that were the religious order of that day, they didn't appreciate that. But those unbelievers there that didn't know very much about him, he was approachable. He was approachable and he loved him and he didn't rag on him. And he was the kind of man, and still is, by the way, that his attitude toward being with people and eating with them came through in a way that wasn't accusatory or made him feel uncomfortable at all. Look through the Bible and see how many times it said, while Jesus was eating, or while Jesus was eating with them, you know, or they brought a man to Jesus while he was eating. Boy, it's in there everywhere, because it's a fantastic tool for ministry. And his answer when the Pharisees and the religious leaders came to him and said, hey, this isn't cool, you shouldn't be doing this. He said, you know, it's not the healthy people who need a doctor, it's the people who really have problems. And that's an excellent defense on his part, because Jesus Christ was marked as a man and a God with great compassion. Then in 1 Peter 3:15 through 16, in fact, I'll read that. It says, but in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. around meals is a real easy way to do that, or sitting in your house. You know, Dave, when he's on campus and he talks to someone, you can do that on a college campus, because during college days, people are inquisitive, and they're used to sitting for hours a day having people tell them stuff and asking questions. After college, it doesn't work that way as much. People are tired, and they come home. They don't want to think real hard. You know, the curiosity level takes a nosedive not long after college, and you kind of want to watch Monday Night Football, you know? But a meal is a fantastic way for people to let their guard down, to sit down with you and talk. And when they notice things in your life, like Larry mentioned earlier, they're going to want to know what's different with you. And there are things that they could ask you when they're in your home they wouldn't ask other places. You ever been trying to share Christ with someone, or you're just real, real close to them asking the very next question, and you've really been able to tell them maybe, but their good friend is right there, you know, someone from their floor or their house or from the Greek system or at their job, and they're a little bit embarrassed. They don't really want to say, okay, well, what's the deal with this Jesus Christ? Why are you different? Well, that's because they're right there and they don't want to be embarrassed. But if they're in your home and you're relaxing and kicking back, I think you've got a much greater opportunity to really have them open up and share with them. It's safer. It's just very much safer. Let's talk now about methods of hospitality. Here's where we get into kind of the practical meat and potatoes of hospitality. No pun intended on meat and potatoes going into inviting them to dinner and dessert. Do it. Invite people over. The thing about inviting people over is, this is incredibly practical. Get your pens ready for this one. Ask them if there's anything that they really don't like to eat very much, or if there's anything that they really like very much. I had a very dear friend who just loved me so much, and her husband was a friend of mine, and she invited me over for stuffed tuna tomato bomb. I don't know what it was. It's a very large tomato with the top cut off, and then the insides were all mixed up, and then it was stuffed with tuna fish with a little hat put back on, a little tomato hat put back on. Well, I don't like tuna fish very much, and I can't stand tomatoes. And so I practiced reverse hospitality, and I ate every bite. But it was hard to do. You know, you drink a little water, and you swallow a little bit of tuna bomb, you know? And so I'm guessing that the conversation probably wasn't as flowing as it otherwise would have been. But, you know, people, you know, sour cream drives me crazy. And if you invite someone over and there's like tons of sour cream in their Mexican casserole that you made, they're going to feel awkward. And making them feel comfortable is a big deal. And Laurie's going to explain like the two kinds of dinners and desserts and kind of things that you can have.
The first one is formal. This is where you get out your fancy dishes and you put candles on the table and you maybe have pretty music playing, fix a really nice fancy dinner. That can be a lot of fun sometimes and really make people feel special and like you've really gone the extra mile. I think, though, that more and more that will make people feel uncomfortable. Most people today, our society, our culture is getting more and more casual so that people are more and more comfortable in casual settings. But every now and then, there can be really fun opportunities. We recently got to do that. There's a daddy-daughter dance in Norman that Chris and Anna went to, and we invited another dad and daughter that we're friends with, and then also a neighbor dad and his daughter. They were all going to the dance, and so we had them all over, and the little girls were all dressed up, and they felt so beautiful. And so we got out our china and candlelight and flowers and all that and had the table all pretty with fancy music playing. And the girls felt really special, and the dads thought it was funny, and, you know. And but that was an opportunity that we could have kind of a formal hospitality and have some people into our home using that as an excuse. The one you'll probably use more often, though, is informal. Informal dinners, informal desserts. Outdoor grilling is good, especially for guys. And if you've got neighbors, they may not really want to come into your house and sit down at your kitchen table for a home meal, but they might be willing to come as far as your backyard. Mm-hmm. They might be willing to do that. The guys can stand around the grill and talk, gives them something to do. If you're wanting to reach out to somebody, to another family at church or something, just pancakes after church. It's spontaneous. You don't have to have it planned. You probably already have all the ingredients you need. If not, you can pick them up on the way home. And I think with informal hospitality for dinners or desserts, that is the kind of thing you can do spontaneously. If somebody has come over to talk to you about something the neighbor has, and it's lunchtime. You can say, hey, I'm getting ready to fix a grilled cheese sandwich. You want one? You can just do something really simple that is low-key. Again, not high pressure. They're not feeling like, what if I don't know which fork to use? They can just relax, and you can love on them.
Plan your spontaneity with detail whenever possible. There's a quote that someone said some years back that I really like. I wrote it down with an ink pen in the front of my Bible so I see it when I'm reading. And it says, life is about allowing the kind of interruptions that Jesus did. I think, wow, I want to do that. I want my life to be about the kind of things that Jesus was about, you know? And my life allowing the kind of interruptions that he did. Because Christ was all about people. You know, he was all about people. And being spontaneous, it happens sometimes when it's very convenient. And sometimes when it happens when it's not all that very convenient. If you can plan some things, though, to be spontaneous, like at my house, I try to almost always have a frozen pizza thrown in the freezer. And that's not much. But if someone comes by, I know I can throw that thing in there, and in a short amount of time, there's at least something, you know, to eat. That's kind of a guy thing. I don't know if I'd do that for a couple coming over. But those kind of things. And my wife and I, we had a rule some years back. Not a rule, but an idea that we try to keep our house within a few minutes clean worthy. You know, we can have some newspapers out or some books out, but if you look around, you think, wow, if someone needed to come over in a short amount of time, that'd be, you know, if can we get this in 7 minutes, can we get this clean enough to have someone over where it wouldn't be embarrassing? That's planned spontaneity. I know that sounds goofy, and I meant it to be goofy, but there is a little bit of a hint of truth in that.
When you're having people over for dinner or for dessert, sometimes let them bring something. A lot of times people will feel more comfortable if they can show up with something in their hands. And also, we as human beings don't always want to feel like we owe somebody something, especially if it's a non-Christian or a new relationship. They might feel more comfortable if they're contributing. If it's a believer that is just really down, or maybe even a non-believer that's really down, sometimes the nicest thing to do is to say, no, no, don't bring anything. I'm covering this one. But sometimes think about whether the nicest thing to do is say, yeah, would you bring the salad or would you bring the dessert? And when they're there, if they offer to help, just letting them put ice in the glasses or set the table or help you with last minute things. Again, sometimes we think that the nicest thing for us to do is to be the servant and totally take care of them. And sometimes that's true. But a lot of times people will feel more comfortable if they're a part of things, if they've got something to do with their hands and they're getting to contribute a little bit.
The second method that you can write down for hospitality, that's just a method, is events. Just events that happen that you can have people over. Our culture is changing really fast. When I was a kid, people used to drop in and out of people's houses all the time. It's just what people did, and everybody was used to that, and it wasn't a big deal. And now that's getting to be a bigger deal all the time. And people just don't go to each other's houses nearly as much as they used to. Not nearly so much. And so if you invite someone over to your house, let's say, hey, why don't you come over to the house next Tuesday or wherever, or our apartment or whatever, they're going to think, okay, are they selling insurance or did my kid, you know, kick their dog? Or I'm not fooling. They're going to think there's something up. If you just invite them over in our generation, if I can lump me in with your college generation, I took that as a yes, thank you. If you invite people over much in advance for no good reason other than to chat, it might just scare the pants off of them. Or they're going to think there's something wrong, and it's going to wig them out a little bit. And so events are a great time. Wig them out is a technical term, by the way. The way that we did that a little bit in college is we studied with people. We had study groups. People come to the house. That's a great way to do that kind of thing. Group projects, if you ever have those, that's a great thing to do. For guys, not to leave you out, sports on TV are great. I mean, you can barely know a guy and say, you know, I bought a big bunch of sausage and stuff, and we're going to grill and kind of have a hamburger and watch Monday Night Football and, you know, or whatever. And you can, I mean, a guy you don't even know very much. You can tell him a couple of guys from work or wherever, from the dorm, whatever, we're going to get together and watch a game. They're not going to think that's weird. I mean, that's not unusual. But guys, try asking some guy, hey, come over to the house next Wednesday. That's weird.
For dinner.
For dinner. You know, they're not going to know what in the world you're thinking. And you need something. And so events are a good thing to do that. And sports are great. Also, just going out, if it's something you've got to go out to, go out to ice cream afterwards. Or go out for some bowling or something like that. That's I know you guys do that. You guys bowl sometimes, too. I keep hearing about people going to bowl.
Or you might be able to go out, and then they might be willing to come over just for ice cream that you pick up on the way home.
It's true.
Again, that's non-threatening. They don't feel like it was real planned, or you're trying to spring something on them. But
they might be willing to do that.
Or you can do, I don't know, novelty parties, I guess I could call them. We have a friend who has Miss America party every year. And she's been a bridesmaid so many times that she has bridesmaid dresses throughout the years. What do you do with those? And so she has her friends over for the Miss America pageant, and they all wear the most hideous bridesmaid dress they've collected. And they all bring a talent, like a harmonica or a kazoo or something. And to me, that's just so goofy. But does that sound like fun? Yeah? Yeah? Not one guy nodded. Not one guy nodded about that, but which is good. That's good. I'll tell you another thing that, here's an inside tip. I have a really good friend. I know his wife a little bit, but he's been a good friend of mine since I was a little kid. And not long ago, my wife and I invited him to come over for dinner. And he's like, oh, great. He said, well, what video do you want me to bring? And I said, no, that's okay. We'll just eat dinner and we'll sit there and talk. He said, oh, okay. Well, then he acted all awkward. And this is a good friend of mine. And so then they came over and we ate dinner. We're sitting on the couch talking and just kind of shooting the bull. And then after a while, he and his wife kind of laughed. They said, you know, the only time we ever do anything with anybody, we watch a video or a movie or something. And, you know, we were scared to death to come to your house because we didn't know what we were going to talk about.
Well, and they watch the movie every night at their own house.
That's true.
They never just sit around and talk. So we wouldn't have even thought of the fact that that would be scary to them, but it was.
And so we had to carry the ball a little bit conversation-wise until they got calmed down enough to start talking about things because that was nerve-wracking for them. And this is a friend of mine. And so you have to be careful about people not really knowing what to do in your house. And so you might have to brush up on asking your questions about, you know, what's your major? You know, what, you know, where are you from? I'm from Plano, too. Anyway. Also, parties are a great time to get together, too. If there's a party, you know, go. You guys, this is number three. Parties is number three. Two is number events. Sorry. Yeah, and ask me if you need clarification on numbers, because you've got an outline, I know. But on parties, guys, it could be that within not very many years, you graduate from college, you might find a spouse and have some kids. Kids are an unbelievable door into ministry. And it's just true. You have your kid's birthday party, you invite all the neighbor kids over. Well, their parents might come over and say, hey, you might as well stick around. And so they talk to you in the kitchen while you're cutting cake and stuff. Because you're doing stuff with your hands, you can chat about what little Jimmy got for his birthday. And people are comfortable at parties. 4th of July is great. I've been to lots of 4th of July parties. Neighborhood block parties for believers. Have a Sunday school party at your house. This doesn't have to be all about people who don't know Christ. Because sometimes people get tired. And just having someone over to come and hang out is a good thing. And then just, you know, family events and things like that. And Laurie scrapbooks and does those kind of things. I don't know much about that at all. How do you do your scrapbook stuff?
Well, not very often, but there have been times whenever I've had what I call a craft night or a scrapbooking party where I'd have a few girls over. Some people do this regularly, like the third Friday night of every month. There are a lot of ladies that do that. But one thing you can do, mostly ladies, this is probably more of a ladies thing, but either just have everybody bring whatever it is that they like to do that they never have time to do, like scrapbooking or needlepoint or whatever they're into. And this is another thing that is kind of like the guys in their football that can be non-threatening to non-Christians. So what I did whenever I did this for a while, I had a mix of Christians and non-Christians, and it kind of gave me a chance to have some of my Christian friends interacting with some of my non-Christian friends, and it created a comfortable atmosphere that was fun. One thing that you might remember if you think about doing this is make sure that your Christian friends are able to be kind to your non-Christian friends. If you have a really uptight Christian friend that is a little bit pharisaical and kind of condescending toward people who do not know Christ, don't have your friend that cusses like a sailor over at the same time because that won't go well and it will not accomplish either one of your goals. Oh, okay, number four is overnight guests. This is just another obvious way of practicing hospitality. Out-of-town friends and family, missionaries who are coming through town. You can, a lot of times, whenever you end up with children, if you do someday, loving on their friends, that's another great ministry. Having them over, letting them spend the night with your kids so that they can see what a Christian home is like and so that they can be exposed to Christianity.
Also, you might be careful, if you have children, where your children go and spend the night. I've been an attorney for 8 years, and it's just not a safe world, really. And so, Be as hospitable in your own home as you can, but be careful about sending your kids places where you don't know very much about that. Just get to know the people a little bit better. I just kind of throw that out as a warning. You can get on the internet and check like the sheriff's site, and you can check like a police station site, just on the internet, and just make sure that if your kid's going to go over to, you know, neighbor Bob's house, that neighbor Bob doesn't have anything heinous on his record, you know? It'll take you 3 minutes on the internet. You guys probably know how to do that better than I do.
what was that? I missed it. When you have people over to spend the night, or just whenever, one of your main jobs in being hospitable is just making them feel comfortable. We keep talking about that. If they're spending the night, tell them where the towels are, show them how to work the shower, give them as much personal space as you possibly can. Don't have your kids share the same room as they are. You can fix them a good breakfast. Breakfast, I don't know, there's something kind of homey about breakfast. Let them know they can help themselves in the refrigerator and in the pantry. Have extra stuff in the bathroom. I've known people that have little, I've never had room to do this or the time or the money, but it's a good idea. Get a little basket and keep it in your guest bathroom and just have extra toothbrushes and razors and, you know, toothpaste and little things that somebody might need that's easily accessible. It's nice if they don't even have to ask you where it is because it's somewhere they can see. And he talked a little bit about having it picked up for people. You want your home to be clean enough that they feel comfortable. You don't want it to be grossed out in the shower. But at the same time, you don't want to wait until your house looks like Southern Living or just like it does in the Martha Stewart magazines before you invite people into your home. You just want to create an atmosphere where you can love on people. And it doesn't have to be a five-star hotel kind of a place to do that. So you just want to find the balance where it's clean enough, they think you're glad that they're there, and you went to a little effort to get them there, but not so much that that you're stressed to do it or you just don't do it at all.
And I'm a guy, and as a guy, I don't like going to a house where I don't know which towel I can touch that will send me straight to purgatory, you know? I don't like that. Or if there's something all really fancied up, like, you know how they press soap into, like, I don't know, giraffes and stuff? I'm not going to use their soap, you know? So maybe you can tell them, you can use the giraffe soap, you know, I don't know. They used to be seashells when I was younger, but I don't know. Number 5, more overt ministries in your home, your apartment, or your dorm. By overt, I mean things that are a little bit more out there for Christianity, like a Bible study or small groups from your church in your house. If you want to do a fun Bible study all on your own, look in the back of your Bible and look up Priscilla and Aquila and just see how, man, they're all over the New Testament. And they're all in different cities, too. They moved all around. They started out in Rome, I think, and they were here and there. And Paul writes a letter and says, oh, hey, tell Priscilla and Aquila hi. And you think, wow, now they're in that city now. And oftentimes it said, oh, and the church that meets in your house or the people that have been with you. And that Priscilla and Aquila, as a couple, they marked people, you know, for Christ. Like Apollos, he stayed with them, I think, for a while. And then he went out from there to have a huge ministry. And so you can't have Bible studies in your home. In the dorms, you can put up some flyers that say, you know, come to a Bible study, or an apartment, you can put some things up. And it may be in that culture that you're in now, people might say, oh, yeah, I'll do that. It might be, though, that you're more likely to get takers after they know you a little bit, because overt Christianity can scare people a little bit. And so they have to get to know you a little bit to make sure that you're not a sect or some kind of a religious order that will do something scary to them or anything. And neighborhood Bible studies, I've also found, if you want to do a study that isn't too frightening for people and be hospitable, get some tapes, like some Gary Smalley tapes that are funny.
Videos.
Some videos, yeah. And you can play those, and people don't feel like it's you telling them what they need to know. Because someone can do it on a videotape, and it can be funny and relaxing, and ends up not being you preaching at them. So that's worked pretty well in the past for us.
Another thing that we've used children for as far as a tool for having people into our home is having children's parties, and I've seen other people do this too. We've done neighborhood Easter egg hunts where we use the family life resurrection eggs at the end where we go through the gospel and the Easter story with the kids, but it's an Easter party. So if the parents already know you, then maybe they're okay with the kids coming over. And so you went through the gospel, but it's Easter, and you know, that's what Easter is. So they're okay with that. And I'm going to go through a few things like this. But I think it's important that, again, we don't want people to think we're trying to sell our Christianity like someone's selling Amway at them. We love Jesus, and we love these people, and so our purpose is that we want them to spend eternity with Christ. But they don't understand that. And so it's very important that they see that we love them, and they don't think that they're just a project, that we're checking off our to-do list because we're trying to win a pizza or something. So I think it's good to have people over just for dessert and sometimes not even mention any spiritual things so that they can tell that you really love them and you really care about them, but then keep building that trust and investing in those people so that you can move to spiritual conversations. I've known some people that did birthday parties for Jesus, and then she could go through the gospel of the Christmas story. This was really fun. We had the neighborhood kids put on a Christmas pageant one year. And so we had the kids to ourselves. A friend and I did this several times. So we were able to really directly with these children go through the gospel and what the real meaning of Christmas was. And then all the parents came over and we had a Christmas party and their kids put on a Christmas pageant. Every parent loves to see their kid doing something, even if it's just in the living room. And that was really fun. Backyard Bible clubs are another fun thing to keep up in your head for a Sunday thing. Child Evangelism Fellowship has great tools for those. It may be that there are people who wouldn't go to a Bible school. They might not be willing to let you take their kid to your church, but they might be willing to let their kid come in your backyard for a few mornings in a summer or a few evenings in a summer. And there you can, it's a formal thing, it's an organized thing, and you can directly share the gospel with those children. And sometimes, and you can invite their parents to stay too, and their parents can hear it. When you're doing evangelistic things in your home or in your neighborhood, I would really pray that God would give you another Christian to do that with you. It's just so wonderful to have somebody to pray with and to kind of help balance things. It's just really good to be a team. But again, be sensitive to the Christian non-Christian balance. If you're wanting to have a non-Christian over with all your Christian friends, make sure that all your Christian friends aren't just going to be talking about their little church activities or stuff that the non-Christian would know nothing about. Just be sensitive to those kinds of things, of how that person would be feeling and whether or not you're being hospitable, whether or not you're making them feel comfortable. Okay, moving on to the next section, making your home attractive to people. And I don't mean beautiful, I mean like a magnet. People would be attracted to your home, so they want to come there. First of all, and we've mentioned some of these things already, first thing is food. Have snacks at your house that you can pull out. Everybody loves food. And whether it's something that's an easily prepared meal or just cookies that you keep in your pantry, coffee, we don't drink coffee. We've got two coffee pots. But there are some people that's really important to them. Coffee is important. Soda. We don't drink that much soda, but we usually try to keep soda at our house so that we've got it so that we can offer it to guests. For kids, we like to have popsicles in the freezer. Just keep that in mind when you're stocking your pantries and your freezers.
Number two, making your home attractive is, sorry guys, cleanliness. Okay, here we go. Here we go with cleanliness. It's a balance. Your home has to be clean enough that people will be comfortable to be in your home, and not so clean that people are going to be afraid to be in your home. You know the kind of house where you walk in and you see the little kids' shoes are all like by the door on a little mat, and you think there's a house rule that you don't go in the house without taking your shoes off. Well, I don't like to take my shoes off. You know, Laurie does, my daughter does, but I like my shoes on. And I think, oh man, what am I going to do now? Do I take my shoes off? Do I walk around, you know, on their floor? Are they going to get mad at me? You know, if you have white carpet, put it in a back room somewhere, you know. But have your house clean enough that you're comfortable with people coming over. Because me, that embarrasses me. If I mess the house up and then someone comes over and I've thrown things all around looking for something, I'll tear the house to pieces looking for something. And if someone comes over, I'm embarrassed and I'm not a good host. Because a good host and a good hostess are best when they're comfortable. When a host and hostess are comfortable, then they can make the person comfortable that's coming in. The same thing with your dorms or an apartment that you might be in. When you're comfortable with the way it looks, you can do a lot better job of focusing on the person that's coming in. When I lived in the dorms, I kept my door open almost all the time. If I wasn't asleep, I kept my door open a lot of times. So it had to be somewhat clean. And people could feel like they could come in and out. And when Laurie and I lived in an apartment, we would invite, you know, the neighbors, you know, come on in. We'd walk in from the mailbox. Oh, well, come on over a little bit. And they would, because we would think the house would be clean enough that we could do that. But again, if you go in the bathroom and there's like nothing in the trash can at all and you're afraid to put something in it, you know, and those kind of things.
My family used to stay with some friends of ours out of town and when I was a child, and it was really kind of nightmarish. They really did have decorator trash cans in every room of the house that like coordinated with the bedding or the bath decor, and we were not allowed to throw trash in them. You had to go all the way to one end of the house in the utility room. There's a trash can we could use. They had a white couch that we were not allowed to sit on. It was a stressful place to be. That was not comfortable. As an adult, whenever I've known, kind of to balance the cleanliness thing, whenever I've known people who always had very immaculate homes, their homes are not fun to be in. Mm-hmm. Especially the mamas are usually very uptight. They're snapping at everyone. They're stressed out. If you're someone, whichever end of the spectrum you're on, work it, come into the middle. If you're someone who can't stand for one thing to be out of place, pray that God will help you relax so that you can love the people more than you love your stuff, that you can focus on loving your family or loving the people that are in your home more than you like order. If you're a person that is a total slob, pray that God will help you get things straightened up enough that you can make people feel comfortable. Those of you who are in my home a lot know that it's never perfect when you're in there. We've got lots of stuff that still needs to be done to it. But just work at finding that balance and making sure you're remembering what the point is and that you're loving people along the way and not snapping at everyone to get it done.
Okay, here's a fun story. I know a lady about your age, and she went to a home not very long ago. And in that home, they're very practical, and they're very frugal. And so they use paper plates, right? Now, that's okay. I'm okay with paper plates. I eat off paper plates. That's okay. But you see, they reused their paper plates. Yes. So when you go to the pile of paper plates, you kind of have to like deal them out like cards to look to see which one has like grease stain on it. Or you know how the little orange fingerprints from eating Cheetos, you know, on there? Don't do that. That's the other spectrum. And guys and gals are just different. You know yourselves. You know your roommates. When Laurie and I were first married, she was studying or something in our little living room, and I thought, I'm gonna be a godly man. I'm gonna be a servant to my wife. I'm gonna clean the kitchen. And so I snuck in there when I thought she wasn't looking. And so I cleaned the kitchen up. And then I puffed my chest out, you know, and see, when you're a man, you do one small thing and you think that you're a hero. You know. And so she came over and I said, "Hey, I cleaned the kitchen." And she said, "Oh, thank you." And then she walked in the kitchen. And she looked around and she's like, "Oh, thank you, honey, but what did you do?" Because I don't see crumbs, you know? And I kind of just reshuffle is what I do. That's kind of how I clean, you know? I'm kind of an out of sight, out of mind kind of guy, you know? Are guys like that? Am I the only guy like that? Is your dad like that? Does he shuffle?
There's someone on the spectrum.
Yeah. Well, and to me, and my mom is a great house cleaner and so on, but I didn't learn that. I'm a guy, and I didn't learn that. Guys, I don't know if your dorms or apartments are that way or whether you have roommates that are that way. But learn how to clean a little bit, you know, especially guys, to look around. Have a girl come look at your place and say, "No, that's a half-eaten peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That's not clean. That's on the counter. That's not cool." One thing I'll mention, too, I know that you guys don't have, like, lots of kids running around your dorm or your house, but it's very, very hard to keep a house clean with little kids. Man, you're chasing them all around, and they knock stuff over, and they just spew bodily fluids, children do. And so you're cleaning that up, and then they go, and you hear something, and it's just hard. And so, guys, here's a tip to the wise. Guys, don't ever come home and walk in the door and look around and say, "Hey, what have you done all day?" They might just tell you. And so, if they're little kids, they're little kids too. As a speaker, the most terrifying thing is when there's a laughter and you don't know why that is, you know? But if you have kids in the house, guys, step it up a little bit and chase the little rascals around or then do some of the other stuff while someone else is chasing the little rascals around, because that's stressful. You can do a whole day's worth of everything, and the house won't look any different than when you woke up.
Or worse.
Or worse. and after working hard all day long. And so that's, or if you have a roommate that you have to chase around, you know.
But it's the same for your neighbors. And if they were to come in and your house is always perfect when they just happen to drop by, then they're just going to think you're untouchable. And they're certainly never going to want to let you in their house. So It's okay when there's toys all over the floor and there's dishes in the sink and somebody stops by. They know you're a real person, and that's okay.
If you love your stuff more than you love people, they're going to know. You know? I mean, it's just going to be really obvious. And ladies, be patient with us guys as we learn to... And this is not on my outline at all, and there's no place for you to write this down, but, you know, not everyone likes a 160-pound dog in the house, you know, or 9 cats. And I love cats, really, but, you know, I knew a girl, and she was a college student lady, and her roommate had several cats, and they climbed on the dishes, and they, like, ate stuff out of the cabinet, and that's scary. So if you have pets... You know, ask someone who loves you over and say, does it smell like pets in here? And if they're like, oh, baby. Because you don't smell them after a while, you know. So check those kind of things. That was a free for nothing there. It's not on your outline.
Number 3 is decor. Work toward making your home aesthetically pleasing and homey. Whether it's playing pretty music or lighting candles or playing cool music, playing whatever it is, whatever applies to whomever's going to be in your home. And notice I said work toward that. Don't wait until your house looks like Southern Living to have people over, because it's probably never going to happen for most of us. Also, pay attention to whom you're ministering to. If you're trying to reach out to single moms, boy, keep things simple. Don't make them feel embarrassed that you are offering them things that are so far beyond anything that they're used to or comfortable, that they're feeling self-conscious when they're around you. On the flip side, if you happen to be a millionaire and you're ministering to really wealthy friends, pay a little bit of attention to the trends so that they're not so distracted, because that's what's important to them, that they're not so distracted that they can't pay attention to what you're saying. Again, to go back the other way, if you are a millionaire or you have lots of money, think really carefully about the home that you buy and how you decorate it. Most people are very uncomfortable in a very, very large home. If you have a very large home, or you feel like it's best for you to have a lot of square footage because you've got a lot of children or you want to have a lot of people in your home, try to select a floor plan that's as little intimidating as possible. I have watched people walk into a big home and they just shut off. They just close up because they're so self-conscious about their home when they walk in the door that they're not comfortable anymore. And that's not the host's fault. You know, that's their own contentment issues. But the truth is, most people in this country struggle with those issues, including Christians. And so really be careful as you choose your homes and as you choose your furnishings to think through what your real point is and what will truly make most people feel comfortable. And also, again, on the flip side, if you have a very small home, don't feel like you can't have anybody over because your house isn't as nice as you'd like or as big as you'd like. If you do a few things to try to make it comfortable and you are loving to people, most people will love to be there. And I say that out of my own struggle. There have been times, especially my wealthy friends with the really big houses, with the really everything decorated perfectly, man, sometimes I don't want them to come over. But the truth is, when people are in your home and you're loving them, they're not looking at the stains on the carpet. They're enjoying being loved on. And I know so many people who won't ever have anyone over because their kitchen's not big enough or their living room's not big enough. And we went to one party that was held in a millionaire's home. It was so that there would be plenty of room for this huge party. And huge house, basement, lots of rooms, lots of people there. And do you know that all the people stayed in one room the whole time? The size of an average home's, you know, a nice home, but an average home's living room, that's where they stayed because they wanted to be around each other. It didn't matter that there were 5 other living rooms and a huge patio landscaped with a pool. Nobody was out there. They were all in the same room around each other. So don't wait to have the millionaire home to have people over.
And a huge bunch of them were in the kitchen, just crowding in the kitchen. If you're guys and you look up and you realize there are 8 of you in the kitchen and the ladies are trying to do something in there, scram, you know, that can really get you in bad trouble. And it's hard to cook when people are standing around everywhere. So, you know, you don't have to scram, I guess. But it's good to be sensitive to that. Number four, which is the last one under that topic of having an attractive home, is kids. If you're going to have kids over to where you're living, like if you have a, you know, nieces, nephews, or people are going to come over with kids. As for me, I've been a lawyer for eight years, and my office was somewhat kid-friendly, believe it or not. And I actually had some toys in a little bucket stashed away somewhere. Didn't use them all that often. But when someone came in and I really wanted to be able to talk to them, wow, kids can be distracting. I mean, really, kids can be really, really distracting. And so throw a little bucket of toys at them, just some blocks or a coloring book or a squeak toy or something. And then all of a sudden, the mother or the father who's there with you can relax and talk. But if you don't have something like that, and the parent has to entertain, you're not going to get four words spoken. On these little lace doily things, what are those for? And the doily things hung off the table just the height where a little kid could try to do the magician trick. You know? And everything that was precious to these people was about 2 feet off the ground. And I thought, man, if my kids don't break something in here, I'm going to do it. You know? And I was scared to death to be in that house. And, you know, my son bonked into something and it tottered and the little thing tipped a little bit and the wife gave that and the slow motion, you know, man, that can wreck your evening. So try to kid-proof as much as possible. And I'll tell you, I know again that y'all don't have children right now, but if you have children that are naughty, nasty, misbehaving children, like nothing else, that will keep people from coming in your home. They can tolerate the nine cats and the big dog, but if your kids are going to bite their kid, you know, or anyway, I was in a home recently and it was just wasn't much fun for me. I couldn't pay attention at all. And so as you raise your children, think about, wow, if I really want to have an impact for Christ in my home, working extra hard to make sure that my kids are lovable and obedient. That's a big thing. And you may think that's like way off in the future and that I'm the old man of the sea up here at the ripe old age of 34, but that's really close to happening in your life. So it's something that's good to think about now. Also, if you really want someone to think you're great, love their kids. Love their kids. If a kid comes and tracks dirt in your house and you say, hey, that's okay, I got a vacuum. And you know, you can talk to him and help him vacuum it. I'm not going to vacuum it up. But you're friendly to them and you're nice to them. And then the parents, they start getting wind of that. They're going to feel comfortable with you guys. You know, if they watch someone else do the things that they should not be doing, and you're compassionate and you're loving and you're kind to them, then the parents will come in relaxed. And that's not a small thing.
Practical stuff to do to be hospitable. Number one, pray for creativity and sensitivity to the needs of people around you. There is no way that any of us can get inside the mind of every person that we would like to minister to. But God can. Pray about it. When there's somebody, a neighbor or a friend or someone at church that you want to help grow or somebody that you want to love on, pray that God will show you how. So many times for us, there have been people that we're wanting to build a relationship with, and there's just really no obvious way to do that. And we've prayed about it, and God has given us ideas of things we can do to, you know, excuses we can use to have them into our home, ways we can build those relationships. Number two, choose the person or people you live with very carefully. If you want to be hospitable, and the person or people you live with don't care for that, it's not going to work. It will not be a good atmosphere. It will not be a place that people are wanting to be. And of course that's important in your dorms now or in your apartments, but at least that's only a one-year commitment. But when you choose your spouse, make sure that you have like vision and like heart. If you are wanting to use your home as a place of ministry and your spouse is not interested in that, then it can't happen because it takes both of you, because both of you have to sacrifice. Both of you have to give up things you would rather be doing with your time. Both of you have to spend time preparing or cleaning or whatever else. And, you know, if you have kids in your house, they're loud, they
spill stuff, they're obnoxious. If you have adults in your house, they may stay past your bedtime. You know, whatever, they can get in your way. And if you don't both have the attitude of glorifying God, of ministering to these human beings as your purpose, then all the stuff that's right there in your face will be a distraction, and it's just not going to work.
Number three is take initiative. This is a big one. This is really a big one. Take initiative. How many times have you guys invited someone over or tried to be friends with someone like, oh, yeah, and they never called you back? Or you realize, hey, I'm always the one that calls. Why am I always the one that calls? Why don't they ever call me? Every time I want to go to a basketball game and find a free ticket, I invite them, but no one, they're not inviting me. Well, it might be because you guys are leaders. You know, you're the ones that are taking initiative and you're the ones doing it. And that can wear you out. But don't take it personally and don't get your feelings hurt or be too offended, because that happens all the time. And you just have to keep on plugging away and taking initiative. And people appreciate it, even though that seems like they stand you up time after time. They really do. They do appreciate it. And they feel like you love them. And then when times get tough, they'll come to you. But don't expect it always back from them. Jesus said in Luke 14...
That's that same one we read earlier.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Uh-huh. Just don't invite people over expecting them to invite you back. This doesn't always work that way. And it's more fun to invite the people over that really have a good time and maybe don't have the means to invite you back anyway. There was a time when Laurie and I were just incredibly, thank you, Laurie, incredibly busy. And we were just emotionally just almost drowning. And we had friends that loved us, that were believers, and they invited us over, and they made homemade bread, and they cooked great meals for us, and when we couldn't come, they sent it to our house. Mm-hmm. That's huge. We weren't able to repay them very well, really, but they didn't care. They're really a help, huge help. That was so nice for us. So encourage believers with that, too, and take the initiative to do that.
Number four, learn to be a conversationalist. If you are going to have people in your home, you are responsible for carrying the conversation ball. And there are a lot of people who will not help you at all. Mm-hmm. And so if that is not your gift, if you are not naturally a person that just is constantly coming up with things to say, read books, pay attention. Just like Dave was saying, ask good questions. People feel loved if you want to know about them. Learn to ask good questions. Learn to care about things other people care about. When you're trying to build a relationship with somebody and you're wanting to have them into your life, learn enough about what it is they're interested in that you can ask good questions. You know, watch the news once in a while, read the paper, have something to talk about. If you've got to memorize a list of categories and make it real structured, don't let them know that, but do that. Practice. It's very, very important in order to make people feel loved that you can handle those awkward silences that will happen when you have people over who are introverted or who are uncomfortable. If you want to love those people, if you want to be hospitable to those people, it is so important that you figure out how you're going to talk to those people when they're there.
Number five, I won't say much, but learn and practice manners. I was in a home recently with a belching contest. And that was not cool. Anyway, that's all I have to say on number five.
Number six, this is especially for us ladies. Read magazines and things for ideas. Again, not so much that you struggle with contentment of all the things you can't do to your house, but enough that you've got a few ideas of things you can do to make it homey or new things you can fix that people will like.
Consider money. This is number seven. Consider the money that you spend on hospitality and offering to God. I don't know how many times I've bought ice cream or something and thinking, praise God, this ice cream is going to go to people who are going to come to my house and hear about Christ. And so don't begrudge, just think, hey, this is me serving God when you're at the grocery store and you're buying stuff.
Talk a little more about that.
Another thing is, don't act completely stressed out if they eat it all, you know, because they'll know. Also, it can be expensive, and people are going to know if you're stressed out about stuff like that. On one occasion, we went to the grocery store and bought some food and left it on the counter, and someone knocked on the door, and just the locusts descended on us. A big crowd of people came in, and they were talking
to us. This is not in this town. It's not you guys.
It's not you guys, yeah. Yeah. You're glad to hear that, Andy. And so these people came in, and they're like, hey, can I have some of your food? Oh, sure. And then about 30 minutes later, we looked up. They had eaten all of our food. I think we had like a heel left in the bottom of a bag. And they ate it all. And we were shocked because we just come back from the grocery store.
Well, and it was a time when money was really tight. When a loaf of bread was, you know, $1.65, I'd bought the nice bread. But we just chose to just kind of offer it up to God and say, this is for these people that we're trying to love on for you, Jesus. And he took care of us. We didn't go hungry. We were fine.
On another occasion, we had people who had just come in and descend upon us because people would, we were hospitable people, hopefully, and they knew they could come in and get in our cabinet and go in the fridge and get stuff. And they're comfortable doing that. Praise God that they were. Then when they wanted to know about Christ, they were comfortable hearing it too. I think there's a correlation between that. But on one occasion, some people knew that we had people just eating us out of house and home. And so you know what they did? They got together on a Saturday and they cooked an enormous amount of food. And they froze it all up and we stuck it in our freezer. And we fed the masses for a long time on that. And that was a beautiful gift from God. That was like, you know, shedding tears kind of a blessing to us. That was huge.
Number 8, this is our last point. Leave time in your schedule to be hospitable. This takes time. It takes time to love on people. And if your calendar looks like that skit, you can't fit them in. And they'll know it if you're so stressed out about everything that you have to get done. It takes time to plan. It takes time to call people. It takes time to do the shopping or the hosting or the cleanup. There will be other things that are important that don't get done if you are hospitable. And sometimes that's hard on me. Sometimes I can be okay maybe choosing to, yeah, come on in, neighbor, sit around, have some coffee. And then they go home and it's 5 o'clock and I haven't fixed dinner. I didn't make it to the grocery store. The evening is full and I get stressed out of my mind. I think, oh, but constantly remembering that this is part of ministry and choosing to make sure that our schedules aren't so full that we can't fit it in, and then choosing to relax about some of the things that don't get done because we've chosen to do ministry this way.
I'll end with 1 Corinthians 10:31, which brings us right back around to the purpose of hospitality. So we didn't learn how to fold napkins, but hopefully we've been staying on the purpose a little bit. And 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. On one occasion, my wife and I, we'd had people in our home, and one child, little girl, was talking to us one evening. She'd been sitting on our floor for a while, and we'd been playing games and stuff. Have games around. Keep some games like Taboo or, you know, Monopoly or whatever. Keep some of those kind of things around. Because people, they like to play games, you know, cards or something like that. And we were talking to this young lady, and she told us that that she'd given her whole life to love Jesus Christ and become a Christian. We said, well, that's great. That's fantastic. We're so excited for you. Well, when did you do that? She said, just a little while ago. I said, well, where were you? And she pointed. She's like, sitting over there on your floor. Well, that was huge. That was so exciting in our lives that God would choose to touch a person's heart just sitting on our floor while we were hanging out. And at the time, we weren't sharing the bridge. You know,
We had
shared the bridge, but not at that moment. Like Dave Geisler is saying, you don't have to be responsible, guys, to do it all. Meet a stranger, share Christ with them, tell them the bridge, lead them in a three-sentence prayer, and they're a new creation. That happens sometimes. I've seen that happen. But more often, what happens is you ask someone who's a believer, how did you accept Christ? Well, I had this neighbor, or there was this guy in the dorms. You know, I mean, have you heard things like that? Or there was this person that cared about me, this person that invested their time in me. Hospitality, I think, guys, is more about time in a lot of ways than is maybe anything else, really. But stick with your purpose in hospitality, and then Christ can work through that. Let me pray real quick, and then we'll release it, because I think we're out of time. Lord, I pray that you would have us be hospitable, Lord, and I just pray that you'd help us to be smart about it and proactive about it. And I just pray, God, that you just do the lion's share of the work, too, that you'd set up times where people could visit in the dorms or in apartments or, you know, summer jobs or whatever, that you would set up things, God, that would just naturally happen to go out after work or, you know, or after class, go to the union or something. That, God, that you would set those things in motion, Lord, for your kingdom. I just pray also that you'd give us, Lord, the attitude to persevere and that we'd really enjoy it and that you'd use this as not only a commandment, God, that you've given us, but that also you'd use it to bring joy in our lives, God, and the lives of other people too.